From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1954 when the U.S. Supreme Court was set to make its decision on a landmark case examining the legal question of separate but equal. That idea went back to the 1890s in the case of Plessy v. Ferguson, which opened the door to legally protected segregation in just about all facets of American life. But in the case of Brown v. Board of Education, the attorney Thurgood Marshall led the team that argued for a change. The odds did not look good, frankly, with Earl Warren joining the court and the court's history. And yet Marshall argued so effectively that the justice decided unanimously in favor of the plaintiff, a massive step to dismantle segregation. So now, a question for you. Would you have known the name of the first black justice on the Supreme Court? Did you know that it was Thurgood Marshall? I ask because I think probably most Americans don't know. I can't remember his name ever coming up in my middle or high school classes, looking back. He was a civil rights leader, but as noted in the program in a new play at Juba Theater, there is no national Thurgood Marshall Day, no iconic monument that we all know. He's probably the least known of civil rights pioneers in this country. Juba is presenting Thurgood on stage now through November 18th. I saw it this week, and it is a powerhouse performance by Lester Purry, who's the only member of the cast. He plays Thurgood Marshall, and that's it. I never found the show to lag for a moment. This hour, a conversation about Thurgood, the play, and the man. My guests include the amazing Lester Purry, who plays Thurgood. I'm kind of running out of words already. You're amazing at what you do. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. So far, I'm loving all your adjectives.
So. Lou Bellamy is the director of Thurgood. Lou, congratulations on this. It's outstanding. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you.
Our thanks as well to being here to Don Kellogg, communications manager at Juba Theater Center. Thanks for putting this conversation together. We're going to talk Thurgood and what else is coming up in the season. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And Jenny Werner is literary director and resident dramaturg at Juba Theater Center. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And welcome back to producer Megan Mack, who's going to say hello for about 30 seconds to remind us that we are within our goal, within reach of our goal, on the last afternoon of our fall membership campaign.
You're right. We are very close to reaching our goal. And wouldn't it be great if you spent your lunch hour listening to Connections and becoming a member of your public radio station and helping us reach that goal so maybe you don't have to hear the pledge drive for the rest of the day? Is that too optimistic?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No way.
But we do need you to call 454-6300 and help us keep programming like Connections going on WXXI. As we mentioned during the last hour, we are one of the few communities in the country that has its own local talk show, a chance for us to hear from actors and directors, people at Juba, who are bringing remarkable performances to our community. And they're doing great work there. We hope that you appreciate the work we are doing here that we're only able to do because of you. 454-6300 or go online to WXXINews.org.
All right. Thank you, Megan Mack. All right. Lou Bellamy, the director of Thurgood, was saying that you find it amazing that people are saying they don't know who the first black Supreme Court justice was. One woman on Twitter, very nice. I'm sure I don't mean to like sort of pick on people. But she was saying, is this a trick question? Is it not Clarence Thomas? And you found that amazing.
Well, yeah. I'm older, so perhaps that has something to do with it. I was about 10, something like that, when my parents used to get opportunity in crisis because they were members of the NAACP, and that was the publication that, mm-hmm. that was sent out. And we used to follow Thurgood Marshall and his men, those lawyers who'd show up with briefcases and fedoras and ties and just strike fear in the hearts of the ugly people, the terrible people. And it was they were heroes to us. So it's surprising to me that stature hasn't stayed with us longer.
Yeah. How do you feel about it, Lester, having to play Thurgood on stage? Do you think most Americans today know much about this man?
Well, unfortunately, I think the answer is no. And it could be a horrible reference, but one thing Osama bin Laden said after September 11th, that is, Americans have short memories, and yeah, we'll be back. And if we don't acknowledge our past and keep that in our educational system, it'll be back.
I think that's a powerful thought there. And Jenny Warner, can I just ask you, I mean, I don't know who's responsible for all of the details in the program, but you're on the money here. I mean, you write here This is probably the least well-known icon in the civil rights movement in this country. I don't know why, though. I mean, it's very strange to me.
It is very strange. And I will. So Gene Ryan, who is the dramaturg on this production, wrote the Playbill article. And it is a fantastic article about, you know, really helping to remind us who Thurgood Marshall was and why he was so important. And I wonder, and I don't know, I have no idea why, but I'm wondering if some of what is going on is that he was fighting these battles for civil rights in the courtroom. And so we don't, because he wasn't out in the public, what we know about are about the courses, the court cases. We know about Brown v. the Board of Education. We just don't know who argued it. And I wonder if that's part of what is happening, is that we know the subject, but we don't know who made it happen.
I get that, but the guy who argued it ended up on the Supreme Court. No, but I think that point is fair. It's also interesting because when you say, Jenny, that he was in the courtroom, I mean, it was not the same as MLK. Well, MLK's name comes up in Thurgood, and I'm curious to know, Lou, Lester, I mean, so much of what I've read is that you based the script and George Stevens Jr. based the script at least partially on interviews, conversations, Thurgood Marshall's own words on this. He talks about how, in some ways, he disagreed with MLK. Am I quoting directly? Accurately?
You have it right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things Lou said during the rehearsals and when he was directing is that what that shows is that black people are not a monolith. And I agree with that. And I also think that the fight for human rights, I like to call it human rights here in America, was really a war. And when you are at war, you have different branches of the armed forces that do different things.
Yeah, different tactics.
Exactly.
Because I should say, but don't mean to interrupt you, Lester,
no,
but I want to make clear to listeners, it's not that Thurgood Marshall disagreed with the goals of Martin Luther King Jr. It's some of their tactics he disagreed
Absolutely.
With. Yeah.
Absolutely. My wife's stepfather was involved in the civil rights movement down in Montgomery, Alabama. And he talks about that some of the marchers disagreed with King and that there were different strategies that they didn't agree with because they felt that they didn't have the political clout to make the change yet, and that if you move too quickly, then that would give the ones who were against human rights a leg up. The police force, the government was all against them. And what power did they have, really, that if they knew, okay, now we're protesting bus segregation, we will operate like a cancer and just go into a different vein and make it something different that you have to fight against. A lot of them felt like the struggle would just be endless.
Hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about Thurgood Marshall's view of the law and how he used the law as, I think, a law as a weapon, which comes up in Thurgood on numerous occasions. Yeah. And we'll kind of work through his career because, as Jenny says, we all know Brown, but we're going to talk about some of his other work and how monumental it was. When the Kavanaugh hearings were happening recently, I was emailing with a couple of family members who are attorneys who just have interesting views on whether you are an originalist or whether you're sort of a living, breathing document person, different views of how you look at the Constitution. And when I remember one of the emails I sent before knowing I was going to go see Lester blow me out of the water with Thurgood was that I look at Thurgood Marshall as a very interesting view on the Constitution as a living, breathing document because, number one, for people of color, it damn well better be because we didn't form a country that lived up to its ideals.
That's right.
And number two, he was quoted in a number of places and sometimes criticized for this, is basically saying he wanted to do what's right and let the law catch up. And that's a way of saying I'm not going to – if there's a law that's sort of poorly argued or justices an opinion poorly written – but the right thing is done, I'm not going to pick it apart technically and say, well, you know, it's poorly reasoned, so we're going to – it's the wrong thing to do, you know, in terms of for the public good, but we're going to throw it out. Thurgood did not believe that, at least from what I've read and seen interviews with him. He believed that protecting people in the best you can with the law and working to change it within the law and using it as a tool. I just found it fascinating. And yet here we are, you know, a month ago, Kavanaugh's hearings are happening. People are debating this stuff. A month later, Thurgood's on stage, and a lot of Americans are still like, who was Thurgood? So I just found it interesting. So, Lester, what stands out to you from his career and how he interpreted the role of the law in his work as an attorney and then a justice?
He was just brilliant. You know, Lou was giving me so much wisdom in the rehearsal process. And he talked about the genius of him and Charlie Houston to use separate but equal. I mean, that's just brilliant. You use separate but equal to get justice, a law that was designed to do nothing but give you injustice. That's brilliant. And in an environment was where the law was really not on your side. It just wasn't. You know, when people hear about a lot of the lynchings and, you know, they were pulled out of jail, it's like, how do you think they got them out of jail? Somebody had to let them out. You know? So the law enforcement was not on the side of black people then. And he had so much courage, so much faith in this country. It boggles my mind that to me, he is the epitome of what a true patriot is. To really believe in the law and the constitution of a country that has been doing nothing but depressing you and taking advantage of you and using you for basically nothing but then your physical labor. But he truly believed in that breathing document, that if it's living, it's going to grow up.
That's so well said. What a definition of a patriot.
Yeah.
That is such a beautiful way to look at him. And by the way, when Lester talks about using separate but equal, kind of turning it on its head, tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that.
Yeah. Well, the law separate but equal, what actually there was nothing equal about it.
There
was never
it was just any really separate.
Exactly. It was nothing meant to be equal about it. So he and Charlie Houston decided to go into the courts and demand that courts enforce that law and make it truly equal. Plessy versus Ferguson. It started out just to keep the races separate, to keep them downtrodden, and he decided to use that. You have to truly give us equal facilities in every arena because that's the law. And states a lot of them didn't have the money, and of course they didn't want to do it. And if you are not going to enforce that law, then the law has to grow up and it has to change. So,
yeah, the show has these really dramatic and riveting moments where Thurgood Lester has taken us through how they did that, how they proved, you know, how many master's degrees do you have on your staff?
What
are the ways that we could show that we've got separate but unequal?
Yes.
And
yes.
Make it unequivocal in a court of law?
Yes.
Just outstanding stuff. Lou, what do you want audience to take away from this?
There's just, you sit there, as you mentioned, and you're just riveted by the things you thought you knew and didn't. One of the most important things to me is, and you sort of got at it when you were talking about people not being aware of Thurgood Marshall, and that is that there have been a group of African-American intellectuals that have been operating outside of the gaze of the larger society for centuries since they came here. And when you see Thurgood, you look at that continuum of intellectual scholarship and application. You see that it isn't a new thing, that Thurgood was taught by Charlie Houston. Thurgood gives lots of credit to the character that his father built in him, and so forth. I have a friend who's passed now who has a saying that I just love to explain it. August Wilson says, "I'm standing in my grandfather's shoes." And I love that image because it's exactly what Thurgood did. He carried that as far as he could. Excuse me. And, you know, it was picked up by other people. And that's what has happened in this movement throughout, you know, from back in slavery with work slowdowns and all sorts of ways of maintaining progress and dignity and so forth.
You're hearing Lou Bellamy, who's the director of Thurgood, Lester Puri, the actor who plays Thurgood Marshall in a one-person show. Thurgood is on stage at Jiva Theater until through November 18th, and I just got a note from producer Megan Mack, who also had a chance to see Thurgood and was, I think, just as amazed as I was, and reminds me that, you know, Lester S. Thurgood recites part of Langston Hughes's Let America Be American Again. So in the age of Make America Great Again, you know, your show brings us back to what Langston Hughes had to say, which, again, talk about interesting people crossing paths, right?
Absolutely. You know, every night that I recite that poem, I think of the Make America Again slogan. And the first time we did it in rehearsal, I couldn't get through it. It was a very emotional thing for me. You know, everyone that I know has always asked the question, it's like, to make America great again, what decade or what century are you talking about? I remember when I was doing, I was getting ready to do Fences with Lou, and a friend of mine said, when is it set? I said, it's set in the 50s. She said, oh, the good old days. I said, no, not the good old days. You know, make America great again thing it can be just so offensive to so many people. And what Thurgood or what Langston has written, he says that America has not been America yet. The country has not lived up to its own ideals yet. But he has such a belief that it will be. He talks about an oath. America will be the country that was put forth on this Constitution. And you see stuff that's happening now, and you can get down about it. At least I can go, oh, man, we're regressing. But every time there's aggression, there's a push. There comes a push that we will resist this. The fight is still in us. Our youth is still going on. Lou talks about seeing people coming in with canes going, yes, yes. We are still fighting from our teens into our 80s and 90s. It is a war that does not negate gender or age. We will continue to fight, and we'll continue to win this thing. Every time there's a push, we get stronger.
You're hearing Lester Puri, who plays Thurgood Marshall in Thurgood at Jiva Now. And as I said, it's just Lester. Did you know that? I mean, when you signed up for this, or did you call Lou and say, you want me to do what? 2 hours and 10 minutes, just me?
You know, Lou and I have known each other for a very long time. As a matter of fact, the first time I worked at Penumbra, the theater that he founded, he was Troy Maxson and I was Corey. Well, a few months ago, he directed me as Troy Maxson in Fences. But I knew it was a one-man show, but I did not know the magnitude. Mm-hmm. Because Lou does such poignant work that's important. He asked, he said, are you? Yes, yes, I'll do it. And then I got the script.
And you're going, you're going to edit any of this? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
No, I did. I was like, I'm sure we'll cut some of this, you know, and nothing's cut.
And it moves.
It's oh, that's so good to hear.
There's two acts, 2 hours, roughly 10 minutes, just Lester. But it's so clever how they use the back wall of the stage as a screen to take you into different places. They use different sound effects. It's just really smart use. And hanging there on the stage throughout the play is the Supreme Court Justice's robes that you know eventually Thurgood's going to get to wear, but all the things he's got to go through. I just thought everything about it was there was a purpose to everything. And I thought, how are you going to get this thing to move and not drag? And you did it. I mean, it's just really amazing, Lou.
You know, it's so interesting because what the subject matter, the text, makes it's what it's about. And it's the heaviest and most important part of this presentation. But what shouldn't go unsaid is the tour de force performance that Lester has brought here to Rochester. I mean, it is... You can feel at the end of the show, you were there, the way the audience, when he comes out for a curtain call, the way they say, oh my God, I know you've done it, you know, because it's just so big that we're not used to seeing that kind of performance.
Lou, we had a conversation on the show, you know, a number of months ago about the overuse of standing ovations, and how if everybody gets a standing ovation, nobody gets one. But this one will get a standing ovation if nobody ever got standing ovations. So this is the most deserved standing ovation. It was just so natural, and everyone jumps to their feet. They also make there are other characters in this show, even though there's just Lester. I mean. Mm-hmm. His first wife is a character in the show. Yes, when you find out about her passing, the audience feels it, even though you never see her.
Yeah.
And that is a tribute to the writing and the performance, too. So that's really clever. I mean, just everything about it, I was blown away. And I was happy to hear, I was grabbed by a teacher walking out. A teacher, I'm trying to remember if it was World of Inquiry, maybe, and said, hey, if you're not covering for this for your show yet, and I said, oh, we're doing it Friday. Oh. And she said, we're coming back next month with 100 students from World of Inquiry.
Oh.
Which is awesome. And I thought, that's what all schools... So if you're listening now and you're in a local school district and or you know kids in a local... You know teachers in a local school district and you haven't already figured out how to get your kids to go see Thurgood, you ought to do that. Are a lot of kids doing that? Do you guys know? Jenny, Dawn?
Yes, absolutely. There are... we have several student matinees.
We have six.
And we actually had to add an extra one because the demand was so high. So absolutely, there are students coming to see the show, and we're thrilled about that. And I think that's one of the reasons that we wanted to do the show was to make sure that students were able to really have a sense of who Thurgood Marshall was and to see Lester's incredible performance.
Thank you. Yeah, and if I may say that if there are any schools out there who haven't booked yet, you come... I'll do everything in my power to meet with you after to get your thoughts and to answer any questions. It's so important for our kids to know who this man was, to understand the sacrifice, which will make them understand choices that they may make in the future. You know, how very important that something as simple as it seems as a vote is. That people risked their lives and their livelihood and their lives to vote. And that if you don't vote, your lack of participation in that right could change the landscape of the country for generations. After you're gone from this earth, people will still be feeling the effects of your lack of a vote.
Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back with Lester Purry, who plays Thurgood Marshall, Lou Bellamy, the director of Thurgood, which is at Jiva through November 18th. Jenny Warner and Don Kellogg are here from Jiva. We're going to talk about what they also have coming up in their season. And you just heard Lester talk about risking your life to vote. In Thurgood, you find out about how he nearly lost his life, a near lynching. Some moments that even if you do know a lot about Thurgood Marshall, you probably didn't until the show, which we will touch on as well, and just remarkable stuff. So let's get our only break of the hour and come right back with them on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections. In an era when print journalism is really struggling and making staff cuts With regularity, there is a new print news publication in Rochester. It's called The Beacon. We're going to meet the people behind it, and they'll talk about their goals on Monday at noon. Second hour, it's the future of malls. Local malls are trying to reinvent in a way, trying to make sure that we are still interested in coming through the doors. We'll talk about how. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we get back to this conversation about Thurgood on stage now, I want to welcome back producer Megan Mack, because it's the last day of our fall membership campaign. And for the next, 28 minutes or so, we have a dollar-for-dollar match from David Strong of Pittsford, who's been a member since 1973. I don't want to tell you what I was doing in 1973. I wasn't even born yet. And David, that is an amazing thing for you to step up and offer a dollar-for-dollar match. So, Megan Mack, tell us the number to call and tell us how we're doing, how close we're getting to our goal here.
We're getting very close to our goal, so it'd be great if we could try to close that out during Connection. So as you're sitting listening to this remarkable conversation about Thurgood, you're hearing from the team behind the show, go to WXXINews.org, click that donate button. It's quick, it's easy, and you'll be part of the WXXI team and family, helping to continue the strong foundation of member support that we have here at the station. And again, that's thanks to David Strong of Pittsford, member since 1973. He's helping us with our dollar for dollar match just until 2 o'clock. So if you've enjoyed the conversation today, you'd like to hear more just like it, you can help us do that. 454-6300.
Megan, I remember some comments from listeners in recent months. One at the beginning of summer said Connections podcasts are her version of beach reading, which was nice. But also we often hear from teachers who talk about actually using parts or all of these podcasts and broadcasts to supplement education. And you wonder if they're going to do that with Thurgood. Certainly they're going to go see Thurgood on stage. But that always means the world to us, because we try to bring in people who will sort of open our eyes and ears to the world. We try to bring in underrepresented voices. It matters to us. And Megan, very few NPR member stations have their own local talk show anymore. So that part of calling 454-6300 is to make sure we still have local talk. I mean, there are alternatives we could throw in from noon to two, and we don't want to do that.
No, we don't. And we're sure that you don't either if you're listening to Connections today or every day. We have very loyal listeners. We hear from you via email, on social media. You call us during the show. We have a caller on the line right now. Thank you for engaging with us every single day. We are here because of you. Come be part of our team. Be part of this Connections team with me and Evan and Rob Braden, our engineer. 454-6300, or go online to WXXINews.org.
All right. Thank you, Megan. All right. So the conversation about Thurgood Marshall, and I want to grab a phone call from Lisa in Rochester. Go ahead, Lisa.
I want to reiterate, this is really a jewel, and I did contribute, and I contribute because of this show.
Thank you.
And this is a great discussion. You discussed briefly, Charlie and the legends who built this plan for desegregation. I wonder if there's going to be part of the show that discusses Constance Baker Motley, who was one of the foot soldiers and then became a Second Circuit court judge.
The answer, at least from a viewer perspective, is no, but that does not mean any disrespect. In fact, Lou Bellamy, director, you want to jump in there? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, thank you for that. What you point out, although she isn't mentioned in the text of this performance, is the breadth of people who contributed to making this thing happen. I can tell you a wonderful story, and I won't say the man's name because I don't want to embarrass him here. He lives in Rochester. He's a retired attorney, and he did the voice for us of Earl Warren. So I'm talking with this gentleman about Earl Warren, and he said, well, you know, right out of law school, I worked for health, education, and welfare, and it was my job to go around the country and check for compliance to Brown. So this is a man that no one knows anything about who contributed mightily to what we consider to be a halfway decent life today. And I thank you for calling and making her name live again, because
Absolutely.
It's important that we understand that it isn't one person who makes this happen.
Lisa, thank you for that. And during our brief break, we were just discussing that Thurgood Marshall has had people like Elena Kagan clerk for him, and has his own sort of impact rippling throughout the judicial system. So that's just a great reminder, Lisa. And Thurgood gets sort of front billing of Brown v. Board, but certainly it was a team effort. And it was just maybe a month ago that we had Carlotta Walls on this program, who was one of the Little Rock Nine, and talking about her book, her life, and how, three, 4 years later, after Brown v. Board, it wasn't easy. This didn't make it easy. This didn't mean, well, Brown v. Board happened. It was unanimous, which, by the way, here's another cool thing about the play. Even though you know which way Brown v. Board's going to go, Earl Warren, you get this reminder of Earl Warren's history, Japanese internment, and you're going, oh, I thought it was unanimous. I'm sure it's not going to be unanimous. I'm sure I was wrong about that. And it's still unanimous. I mean, they give you this. It's just a lot of drama that you didn't expect in this play. But having said that, it doesn't mean it's easy. And I think that Lester, it's important for all of us to remember that Thurgood Marshall's work here is none of this is sort of clean and simple progress. I mean, it's a push. It's a push back. So when you talk about how you feel now, are we regressing? Unfortunately, history, progress is not a straight line, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, and I think that's why it's so, so important to know your history. A lot of times, as students, we simply depend on academia to tell us. Well, they can only tell us so much. And you have to go out and research and look and discover for yourself. And Jiva Theater has set up for the community to discover a pearl, and they've left it wide open and easy to find. Because, as you mentioned, there are things that you discover that are not mentioned in any public school that I know of.
Yeah.
I know I didn't get it either from elementary all the way through college. Thurgood Marshall's name was never mentioned. Brown v. the Board of Education was maybe three pages,
yep,
and it was kind of glossed over. You didn't get the inner workings of it. You didn't get into the blood and bones of what was happening. You didn't get a chance to feel what real people were going through.
You know, when you say that, I think of the behind Lester in the show, we have various projections up. And right after you come out and talk about the ruling on Brown, the projection behind it is that famous photo of a woman sitting on the steps of the Supreme Court holding a newspaper with her daughter with her. And it shows the immediacy of a decision on a large court. It has immediate ramifications for common, everyday people.
And also the pressure that Thurgood Marshall felt, knowing that if you lose this case, does this cement separate but equal, at least for a generation? Does this end any chance to take a big stride forward? I mean, that kind of pressure is massive.
Sure. You know, and we, you know, it's that's brought up in the play of when he goes before the Supreme Court to argue Brown, and he looks out and he sees a sea of people counting on him and his legal team. Wow. Their future, their destiny, their children. Their children's children's destinies are relying on this case. And ultimately, his skill in arguing the case, the research that his team did on this case, you know, it could impoverish and, in quotes and out of quotes, imprison generations of people.
There's great little details too. How often he was interrupted by the justices compared to a white attorney. I mean, there's so many things that just add such resonance to it. So before we turn to what else Jiva is doing this season, a couple more questions, if you don't mind. How much did you study the cadence, the voice, the person? How much is this your version of Thurgood? How much did you try to make it as much Thurgood as you could? How do you take that process?
With someone who's a historical figure and someone as important as Thurgood, you try to put as much in as you can. The thing about Thurgood is this play covers a pretty large span of his life, and his tones and cadences began to change. And you can't put all of it in, because then it'll become purely academic. And so some of it has to be dramatized. Some of it, you have to feel the immediacy of it. But any character an actor does is filtered through them. So what I believe is that what this play does is that it makes me Thurgood Marshall. And it makes every member of that audience have the opportunity to also be Thurgood Marshall and to filter who he is through their lives. You can take the wisdom, you can take the subject matter that he spoke about, and you can incorporate that in your life, and that causes Thurgood to continue.
There's also this really interesting dynamic that on the night I was there, the moment the Brown verdict is revealed, the audience cheered.
Yeah.
And you sort of egged him on, like, you know, damn right, you know?
Yes.
There were other moments where I thought the audience was about to burst into applause. And there are moments where that would actually be appropriate. And given the fact that the show is staged as Thurgood Marshall, 1992, talking to Howard University, right?
Right.
So the audience sort of plays the audience of Howard.
Yes.
And I wonder, on different nights, are there more moments where the audience actually bursts into applause? And that's probably fine. You can probably roll with that, because in that setting, it's actually kind of appropriate. Whereas if we were watching a play of you're Thurgood, this person's Buster, this person's Charlie Houston, this person, then we're sort of observing, but we're not going to burst into applause.
Right.
But I wonder if it's more appropriate for the audience to actually interact a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one night, as I was walking across the stage talking about the selection of Earl Warren as Chief Justice, and I said, would he be your choice? This woman said, no. You know, and I was like, now let me tell you the results of that.
Exactly.
It was a great moment.
Do you enjoy those moments to kind of ad lib with the audience?
That's what I love about theater, is it's a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. You feel the energy of the audience. And the audience can slightly guide the course of the performance. Not too much, you know, because it has to be within a certain vein. But the night that the audience cheered, oh my gosh, that was so much fuel. It energizes me to hear the gasps on certain decisions.
Yeah.
There's no way it can't affect you.
Lou, as director, is that all right with you?
Oh, sure. We discuss ways to handle that, of course, and it will be different in every audience. Where you heard them break out in that spontaneous applause, it was different the other night after the Warren verdict was read. They clapped for a good 20 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
And I think what that says is it's a vote by the people that they agree, that they find the humanity in a decision like that and want to celebrate it, and they're not going to wait to the end of the play to do it. And I love it. You know, that's what we live for. Yeah.
I mentioned as well what you learn about the danger that people like Thurgood Marshall had to face. And, you know, Lester, in his bringing Thurgood to life, brings actually a macabre little bit of humor when he's talking about kind of putting a coda on what happened, where he was almost lynched.
Yeah.
And so, of course, what you guys had me doing after the show is going back and kind of Googling more. And, you know, and I'm reading that, and I'm reading in the program, and I'm reading in different sources that he had to travel to town. One time he traveled to town in a casket to be concealed.
Yes.
He slept in multiple hotel rooms in the same night to avoid possible danger. But you tell that poignant story of nearly being lynched. And I kind of just wanted to ask you, Lester, if, I mean, you know, you get used to performing it and you get into the character. But the first time you're going through that, how that hits you, if that's emotional for you, to think about what that man dealt with.
There are so many moments in this play where I would just break down crying, you know. And that moment is very personal to me. I'm trying not to get emotional here because when I was a little boy, my mother told me about a lynching that she heard. She didn't see it because her grandmother kept her in the, her mother, I'm sorry, my grandmother, kept her in the house where a young man was taken out of prison and he was lynched. And so she heard the screams of this young man being lynched. And to know the history of lynching, that people actually brought their children and they sold popcorn and candy apples and peanuts and they took pictures smiling next to these lynched men and women and children. That it was a huge social event. It is something that as a performer, I really have to contain myself. Otherwise, I wouldn't get through it. I wouldn't get through it. It's like my heart races every time when Lou directs me to look up at the branch. And I know that southern landscape so well because I was born and raised in South Carolina. And to know that as a young child, when I would walk home sometimes and see trees against the moonlight, and my mind would go back to the story that my mom told. And to know, I think you'll find in every African-American community today where folks my age and older will say, hey, we had to be home before the streetlights came on. Mm-hmm. I know why. Because there was the specter of lynchings happening at sunset.
That was a tough part of the show, Lou.
It certainly was. And what Lester reflects is the way in which those violent acts, and we feel it through Thurgood, were meant to send a message to the entire African-American community. That's what terrorism is. That's exactly what was going on. And you begin to feel that terrorism when he is in a car and, you know, through sound effects and visuals and so forth, you hear the highway patrol car drive up, the door slam. And as you describe them, beefy cops with shotguns come up to the car. That is frightening to anyone, and it's meant to be so. And as you say, it's palpable. Yeah. You can feel it.
And the fact that in most cases they left those lynched bodies hanging for days and weeks to send that message. And I don't want to get off on another subject, but it was in effect the same message when certain statues went up all over the South. They were put up in areas to send a message. They were put up in government buildings, parks where they did not want black people to be, and to send a message, we are still here.
Thurgood on stage at Jiva through November 18th. And Dawn, you got a lot. You got a lot to talk about this season. I know you're proud of Thurgood, though.
We are. We are absolutely. And going back to the audience reaction, the audience feeling comfortable to react to what's happening on the stage. I think that's really facilitated by the intimacy of our space. You know, the intimacy of that theater itself. It's a theater that gives you the license to sort of do that with certain pieces, you know, which is really nice to witness.
You want to add to that, Jenny?
Yeah, I just would love to sort of reflect on what some of this conversation, and it's making me remember what our conversation was when we were talking about putting it into the season, and about how this story tells some really tough stories from Thurgood Marshall's life and stories of the civil rights rights movement, but it's also there's such hope and optimism that things can be fixed. And I think that that's one of the things that is so amazing to me about this play, and so why it's so important to have it in our season as we look at all of the things in our country today or in our country's history that we can be angry and feel ashamed of, regardless of how proud we may be of other things in our country's history, that this play gives us an opportunity to celebrate somebody who was so optimistic and fought for equality and justice and allows us, as I think, as Lester said, allows us all to think about how we can do that too. What are the ways that one person can make a difference? And I just think that's so important. That's a big part of why we wanted to put the show into our season in the first place.
I'm going to remember Lester's words about Thurgood Marshall in terms of being a patriot, and that will be one of the things that I want my son to learn about him. What does patriotism really mean? We're going to make sure he understands the story of Thurgood Marshall. So let's talk a little bit about, in our remaining minutes, what else do you got on the stage coming up?
Well, you know, we have got three world premieres this season, which is pretty cool, you know. We are one of the 25 most attended professional theaters in the country, and we are really setting the bar for world premieres each season. You know, last year we had a couple, and this year we've got three, which is very impressive, including Revival, the Resurrection of Sun House, which concludes our season this year. But that's another one of our Rochester Stories series, which I know Jenny's very, very excited about. I am too. It's another hero, but a Rochester hero, Rochester story.
Yeah, we were on this program several years ago talking about this play, about Sun House.
Yes. That was a couple of years ago now?
Yes.
Shockingly, we started this project in 2014. And in 2015, we did a huge blues festival celebrating the life and legacy of Sun House. And at that, we had the very first reading of Revival. And now, at the end of our season, we're producing Revival. And it's so wonderful to spend time with Sun House and in Sun's world. And it's an incredible play with music, with Sun's music. And I know that everybody's going to love it. So we're really looking forward to that.
And again, when's the run of that?
That's May 1st to June 2nd.
Okay.
So it's the conclusion of our season.
Okay.
But before then, you know, we've got some great, great stories, some great plays. We're partnering with Syracuse Stage twice this season, which is wonderful. We're very excited about that, for a Tony Award-winning play called The Humans. It's about a very functional family. They're functional. They're not dysfunctional, but it's a functional family Thanksgiving. Let's put it that way.
a functional family Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving, yes.
I didn't know those things existed.
and then we're doing a wonderful comedy, which is one of the top plays produced by professional theaters around the country, called Native Gardens. And it's a little bit of a backyard comedy, so that we're really looking forward to that.
It's a great play by Karen Zacharias. And it's a play about boundaries and how we decide where a boundary is and what our boundaries mean to each other and how we get along as neighbors when we may have very, very different approaches to life.
Okay. When's that?
That is in the spring, and that is in March, the end of March to the middle of April. So we're very excited about that as well. And one play I'm very looking forward to that we are doing in our fielding stage is called The Royale. And I know there's a little segue from Thurgood into The Royale, because you mentioned Jack Johnson in Thurgood. And this play, The Royale, is based on him. It was an African-American boxer in Jim Crow America, and he wants to be the world heavyweight champion and his struggles for that. So that's going to be a fantastic. I've seen that production. I've seen that play in London, and it is an experience. It's an incredible theatrical experience that you feel so much a part of. So, yeah, we've got a great continuing season.
Yeah. And I would also add that our third world premiere of the season is The Magician's Daughter. Oh, I guess we only talked about one world premiere but so far. But The Magician's Daughter is a great new play with lots of magic by Lila Rose Kaplan. And it's an incredibly beautiful show that's going to be in our Fielding as well. And it's just it's a magician show, but it's also the story of a relationship between a father and daughter from the daughter's point of view. And
what's your third world premiere? We're going to squeeze it in.
The third world premiere is called Hard Sell. It's by Brent Ascari, and it's a farce. It's very funny.
And when is Hard Sell coming?
That's our January play. So it's a good play for January. It's a comedy in the middle of winter. And, you know, it's one of those plays that you, when I read it, I laughed out loud. It was hilarious. So we know it'll be hilarious as well on stage.
The schedule where? Online where?
AjivaTheater.org.
All right. Well, thank you for being here and for bringing us up to speed on what you're doing. And congratulations with this and everything else that's happening there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lester, Lou, I don't even know what else to say other than thank you for bringing Thurgood to the stage and giving me and so many an education on this. It is important. It's not just a great show. It's important. So thank you. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You got it. That's Lester Puri, who plays Thurgood Marshall. Lou Bellamy, director of Thurgood, the play on stage at Jiva through November 18th. Don Kellogg and Jenny Warner here from Jiva, a great way to close out this week. So thanks to everyone who has been a member of our community here on Connections. Whether you've contributed and you're a member of WXXI or not, we always appreciate you listening. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. And we're off to have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on what we always say, and I hope it means even more on a week like this, member-supported public radio.